Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Mad Yourself a Man.
A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Madman
and talk about it.
Thank you so much once again for listening to the world's only Mad Men podcast. We are, of course, the only Mad Men / The Wire / Sopranos podcast that has been recognized by Jeopardy. That's right. Jeopardy named this podcast in one of their questions. So you are listening to something that is Ken Jennings approved.
That's right. He loves it.
He loves it. He's a big fan, I'm sure. Ken, go on the pod. Thank you to everyone who's been giving 5 stars in review. We've been getting a lot of them recently, and I've been really happy, although some of them a little meaner than others, Vince.
Uh-oh. What's this one say? They were mean to me? I don't know if my heart can handle it.
Oh, they were mean. Listen to what this one reviewer said. This reviewer said,
"He needs a spanking."
He was talking about you.
That could be read as mean or it could be read as naughty.
That's true. At the time that I clipped that, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this clip.
I don't find pain sexual, just for the record. Like, I don't want my skin slapped in a lascivious manner. It doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't do anything. No.
What about mean phrases?
I don't know. I take those on a case by case basis, I think.
Like if you and your wife were having sex and she was just like, you're a terrible parallel Parker, would that
your articles are stupid.
Yeah. You don't write good. I mean, would that help or hurt? What do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question. Depends on the moment, I think. You know?
I've got lots of good questions. That's why
we've got lots of good Mansers.
Mansers. Yep. Welcome to Mansers, the podcast for men. The world's only men podcast.
The world's only podcast by and for men. Yeah. We're trying something new. It's never been done.
Never been done. I hear it's a market that has yet to be tapped. Technically, this is a Manosphere podcast. It's a Mad Manosphere podcast. And today, we're talking about, from season 2 of Mad Men, episode 4, 3 Sundays. And our guest is a fantastic political commentator, the co-host of The Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome Emma Vigeland.
Hey, it's the Fonz, wrong show.
Yeah, well, we'll do Happy Yourself a Days at some point. Emma, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Oh, I'm so excited. I think I said this to you over text that Mad Men is my favorite show of all time. I've seen it 5 times through.
Damn.
I think, you know, there even it's issues like the casting of Glenn are hilarious and quaint. Yeah. I find new details every time I watch. And, you know, I'm the kind of person that peruses the Reddit pages after the episode. Just to get a taste of what the other psychos are feeling.
I can't wait to hear the trivia, because we always neglect the trivia.
I didn't check Reddit before coming on here, but maybe I'll do that midway through, see what they have to say about this whole damn thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those shows that, because it existed at a time like sort of pre-Reddit, I mean, maybe Reddit was around, but it was like, before TV discourse really became just completely like ruined shows.
Yep. I mean, it's ruining The White Lotus for me. I mean,
absolutely. It's ruining that. It's ruining what is that called? The one with the elevator that changes your brain.
I don't watch Severance. It's just I draw the line at Apple TV. I'm not paying for it.
Yeah, no, I don't pay for it. I just
it's good though.
I know.
It's one of the better ones. I hate that.
That was great. Yeah, I hear it's good.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's better than Shogun, though. Shogun is like...
For me, it's Paramount Plus. I'm like, I ain't paying for that. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair one, too.
I feel like with Paramount Plus, the problem was...
But now I can't watch Landman.
Landman?
Landman.
What's Landman?
It's got Billy Bob Thornton.
He plays the landman?
He's the landman.
I think like if you're white and you're over 60 years old, you're contractually obligated to watch Landman. It's like from the guys that made
Yellowstone. Oh, okay. So it's in that universe. It's
The Taylor Sheridan expanded universe. He is like he's like Ryan Murphy for Golf Dads.
Exactly.
He absolutely is. Right. And like I was told up front by people who watch the show that don't worry, there is good Native American representation in it, which made me feel like actually maybe there isn't. So
my shirt that says not involved in human trafficking is raising a lot of questions.
Yeah. That's very strange, especially since you weren't asking.
Well, people are asking. If you've ever seen like a Taylor Sheridan project, say Wind River, it's not like his strong suit necessarily.
Well, my family can just read my mind and they know when the wokeness is coming.
Okay. There's got to be trigger warnings for people with the woke mind virus.
Yeah. Well, if you've seen Wind River, it's about Jeremy Renner like going to an Indian reservation and being a better Indian than all of the Indians.
Oh, so it's like The Last Samurai, but made now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but like real quick, have you rewatched The Last Samurai?
I have not.
It's pretty good.
Dude, it's Edward Zwick, Blood Diamond.
I know, same guy.
I hate Blood Diamond too.
What? Are you crazy?
It's insane. Well,
are you crazy?
Don't get started.
You get full pay me for full damn.
See, I'm not as quick on the draw. I didn't know we were doing Leo in Blood Diamond.
I don't know if you know this, but in America it's bling bling, but out here
it's bling bang. We got a lot of Blood Diamond pulls on this podcast for no real reason.
I do Leo and Matt does Digimon Hansu.
Yeah. Where is he? Do you see a Daimo? I'm sorry, Emma.
He's always good. Yeah.
But hey, Emma, I have a question for you. What's your favorite advertisement?
I gotta say, Jardiance right now is really tickling my fancy.
What is Jardiance?
I think it's a medication. I would have to look up the specifics of it because I haven't yet asked my doctor about once daily Jardiance, but it has a phenomenal jingle that, you know, I don't necessarily feel like I want to sing it right now, but
I want you to sing it.
There's so many medications.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
No, I mean, that's as far as I'm going. You got a little taste. People can look it up. The fact that you guys don't know this, maybe it's an East Coast, West Coast thing.
Yeah.
We don't have Giardia out here, I guess.
Jardiance?
Jardiance. Okay.
We have Skyrizzy, which makes me laugh every time.
We have that here, too.
Okay, well.
But wait, do you guys not have cable?
No, you know what?
I do.
I do not. And so maybe I'm missing out on like a whole wave of, you know, new advertisements. I only see pre-roll and mid-roll ads now.
No, I think for you, Matt, it's that you don't watch sports because sports, like live sports, tends to be the only thing
that's true. I see advertising during.
Well, all right. The betting sites, ads I hate now, right? And they're like, you know, especially the one, like I love Eli Manning's a Giants fan. He gave me two Super Bowl championships and I was at the Super Bowl in the 2011-2012 season and saw him. But he is in every ad. Like, it's just like at a certain level, the Mannings, guys, like,
yeah.
we don't need it. It's too much. Yeah. But anyway, sports gambling, the ads are so annoying that it's turned me off enjoying even putting like $20 on a game. But yeah. It's because I put on CNN in the morning before work, so I know what the news is like in the morning. Basically, I have this garbage on in the background, and it's all pharmaceutical ads for old people that are still watching cable news.
So Jardiance is a pharmaceutical, it's a medication, correct?
It's a medication, and it has a really phenomenal jingle.
Okay, I think I found it. Let me see.
I have type 2 diabetes, but I manage it well. It's a little pill with a big story to tell. Ooh. I take once daily Jardiance.
Jardiance works 24/7 in your body to flush out some sugar.
Yo, that was...
Gets me going in the morning.
That's like 9 to 5 for people with the sugars right there.
Yeah, if you got the sugars, listen to this song. It's by Dolly Parton. That is... That's a really good fucking jingle. I gotta say, I haven't heard a good, like... song from a commercial that's kind of made me feel good in a while.
Except for Whopper, Whopper Junior, Whopper, every something. What it's like? Somehow the low energy flow like really does it for me. Yeah, there you go.
Have it your way. You rule.
Does it say you rule at the end?
Yeah.
I love advertisements that make me feel good by saying
positive
good.
Affirmation.
Yeah. You are a Burger King when you go there.
Oh yeah. Shit! What do you're kings the do? King?
They rule.
Yeah. They rule.
Yeah. Right. Damn. Right, you'll feel on top of the world once you eat this Whopper.
Oh, my God. You know, before I gave my life up to the Lord / doing comedy for the rest of my life, I did an interview with an advertising agency, and it was the agency that made those Burger King commercials with the weird king.
Mm, yeah, those
and,
are good.
And like, you know, The Office, I think that was like the only ad that was like their...
They probably thought they were hot shit.
Oh my God, dude. It was like their flagship ad. I think it bought everyone there a car, essentially. And so like The Office was just filled with like king stuff. They're like, here's a picture of Shaq with the king. Here's a picture of Terry Crews with the king.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, those are weird commercials, guys.
Right, exactly.
I like what you do. And then I didn't
get your creative juices flowing.
I mean, I was like, it was one of those things where I was like, there's a crossroads in my life here. I could either do this or I could not do this and stick to doing open mics. And I stuck to the open mics, and boy, what a mistake I've made.
Yeah, you blew it.
But this is not a podcast about my multiple failures in life. No, this is a podcast about Mad Men. And we, of course, cannot talk about Mad Men without first playing the theme song.
Mad Man. Madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Mad. Man. Mad. Man. Mad. Man. Podcast.
Oh. All right,
I've never heard that. That was such, really took me off guard. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we're really stupid here on this podcast.
It sets the tone for what you're going to get.
That's right. Just in case you thought this was a good Mad Men podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, we're talking about from season 2 of Mad Men, episode 4, 3 Sundays. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
A last-minute pitch meeting has Sterling Cooper staffers working double time in preparation. Peggy's family hosts lunch for their church's new priest, and Dawn and Betty have a family weekend together. Also, Roger Sterling is smitten with a date that Pete and Ken provide to a client for a business lunch.
Okay, so that's the synopsis, but more importantly, Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode was set in?
That's right, Matt. We cannot evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context, and we like to put some of that context back in with a little something that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
That's right. We got a couple signs of the times here, stories, and then a couple fun ones.
Okay.
First, you know, just setting the scene where we are in history. Peter Fechter, age 18, was killed by East German border guards as he attempted to cross the Berlin Wall into West Berlin.
Oh, shit.
Fechter's death has been described as, quote, the most notorious incident in all of the 27-year history of the wall. Fechter slowly bled to death from his bullet wounds in front of newspaper photographers and hundreds of spectators who were unable to assist him, and East German guards who refused to approach him until he died an hour later.
You know what's crazy? What's crazy about like East Germany was that like after World War II, they were like, okay, so you guys, obviously Nazis are bad, but you guys can still kind of do like some Nazi stuff.
Yeah.
And that's all right. It's very strange. You never really, that's crazy.
In 1996, indictments would be returned against the two former guards, Rolf Friedrich and Eric Schreiber. They would be convicted of manslaughter and placed on probation.
Even fucking cops in Germany still get a slap on the wrist for murder.
Yeah, they're border guards. They can do whatever they want.
God damn it.
Another one. Denied the right to an abortion in her home state of Arizona and anywhere else in the United States, Sherry Finkbein received the procedure in Stockholm, Sweden. Mrs. Finkbein, host of a children's TV show in Phoenix, had been seeking to terminate her pregnancy since late July after learning that a medicine she had taken was thalidomide, which was found to cause severe birth defects.
Damn.
Oh, well, so that was what? What year are we looking at?
1962.
Here? 1962? Okay, so that's not today.
Not today. No, today you don't have to fly all the way to Stockholm. You just have to fly... Where can you get an abortion still? Can you get an abortion in California? Yeah, you can.
I think
get
so.
An
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot to set the scene. These are all from August 17th, 1962.
Gotcha.
Here and you know, here's a fun one. Headline of this one from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Headline: goofed somebody. Backward go things reversal power in.
Okay.
That's the headline.
Can you read that for me one more time, please?
So, top headline, goofed somebody. Subheadline, backward go things, reverse power in.
Ugh, I can't.
All
like,
right. My Don brain, wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
Don would not like that.
Yeah. Don would yell at you.
This is definitely a what's his face headline?
Paul Kinsey.
Paul Kinsey, yes.
Too cute by half.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Valdez, North Carolina. Imagine that you're working in a bakery. Suddenly, the conveyor belts carrying the bread stop, reverse, and begin hurling loaves at you. It would be perplexing, to say the least, and it happened here. Suppose you're working at a hosiery mill. The machine stop, reverse, and needles became jammed with thread. Gears break. Socks become entangled. That happened here, too. These and other nightmarish things occurred Tuesday when machines turned on... When machines turned on their operators because of a freak electrical power disturbance.
Yo.
Telephone service was also interrupted, adding to the confusion. No one could find out what went wrong.
This is the first, like, Skynet has become self-aware. Like, in 1962,
right.
The robots started coming after us for the first time. First by shooting loaves of bread at us. Now,
yeah,
by
it sounds very I Love Lucy, doesn't it?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I kind of miss this, you know, type of being attacked by bots. Now it's just a bunch of fake Twitter users calling me gay.
And don't forget Jew.
Calling me a gay Jew. that's the entire, like, bots suck now. They don't even throw bread at you.
A Duke Power Company spokesman said it was all caused by a, quote, phase reversal in a 40,000 volt line.
Okay.
Another one. This is a good headline. I feel like the headline maybe overpromises a little bit on this one.
Okay.
Headline, Irish humor is revealed in Will.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Overpromises on the humor.
Yeah. I want to know.
I mean, I bet you can figure out the type of humor that it is.
It's just it's something sad masquerading as humor. Yeah.
San Antonio, the will of Owen Kilday revealed his Irish humor Thursday when it was filed for probate. The Bexar County Sheriff died Sunday. He left $100 to a niece, Mrs. Betty Ann Kilday Drogula, quote, for her to
Drogula.
Buy a club.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very Rob Zombie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hell yeah.
For her to buy a club to use on her husband. She also got another $1,000. Okay. I mean, you there had to know spousal abuse.
Yeah,
spousal abuse.
I thought it was going to be in there. I left you $100 to buy a rolling pin to hit your husband with.
Yeah. He's always hitting you, so I gave you something to fight back with. He left $400 to his brother, Judge Paul Kilday, to repay a loan made many years ago. The judge quickly filed a disclaimer saying he considered the debt paid. I mean, that doesn't sound very Irish humor.
Yeah, that just sounded like a good thing he did.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been the news machine.
Amazing. It's good to have the context of what's going on at the time this episode is set in.
Very un-Irish to still have money to bequeath to your relatives when you die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you're like my Irish relatives, what you do is out of spite, you leave the house to your neighbor, and you leave any money you had to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
It all went to pay for an open bar tab in the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I do love like the harshness of the Northeasterner. It does cross from, you know, just generally Irish people to also Irish Catholic people as well.
Very specifically, yes, yes. It was, yeah, my mom still mad, still very, 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 very mad. Uncle John, I know that you're dead now, but I hope you're feeling her wrath in hell. I'm just kidding. He's probably a good dude. All right. So today, the Draper D story will be based on the song Monday Monday by the Mamas and the Papas. I'm just going to read the lyrics because I have not recorded it yet. Let's see. Passion Sunday, wife in bed with me. Sunday morning, Sally pours her dad a Bloody Mary. On Sunday morning, Catholic Mass is boring. Peggy tries to leave, but Father Gill makes Peggy stay with her family. Anyways, you can hear the whole goddamn song at the end.
Fact check, wasn't that a screwdriver? Because I had it in my notes.
Wasn't it? No.
It looks
like a Bloody Mary, but yeah, it looked like it was like light in color, so that was like heavy on the vodka.
Oh, it was like 7/8 vodka.
Yeah, it was mostly vodka, and then I thought it was tomato juice that she was pouring in. Because
yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, we did see orange juice earlier, and it was like concentrated and not in a big open top.
Oh my gosh, that takes me back to my grandma used to have that orange juice concentrate. My goodness.
Yeah. This is a holdover from that era in which they were just really excited to have any dehydrated foods.
Yeah. Or like we're in space. We're like the astronauts.
Yeah, everything had
space. Or it's for the bunker. Like, I mean, in the backdrop of this episode, obviously the Cuban Missile Crisis is coming around the bend in a few episodes. So they're all a little paranoid, which is kind of a theme here as well.
Yeah, yeah. I also feel like there was... Have you guys ever, like, looked at an old cookbook?
Yes. Like, do you follow the account 70s Dinner Party on Twitter?
No.
Oh, I love... Yeah, it's fantastic.
I
gotta check that out.
It is, like... It is straight disgusting what people used to eat. Like, I found this old cookbook from my grandmother, and it was all like Jewish recipes from the 40s, and I was like, oh, I'm excited to cook these. I love to cook, you know. Let's see what's in here. And then it's just like 18 cans of tuna, and you're like, boy, bad start. And
a
then it's just
savory,
like,
jello molds and shit.
Everything is just like canned. Everything canned. Milk, canned tuna. They were so stoked on cans and canned technology that I think That is kind of all they did. Canned peaches. Nothing fresh.
Did you
fresh.
See in this episode, Don is eating plain spaghetti as our... Oh, God.
I had a note
them.
About how terrible that spaghetti looked.
Why? And yeah. Do you guys spoil that? I should have asked this before.
Yes.
Don't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, it just reminds me how, like, later in when he's with Megan also makes him plain spaghetti. And I'm not sure if this is a Don idiosyncrasy or if it's like what we're all talking
thing.
About, a 60s yeah. horrible food thing.
Yeah, maybe canned, like, tomato sauce hadn't been invented yet. So they were just like, well, I'm not going to pour right. V8 juice on my goddamn noodles like a psychopath.
I would have loved to introduce Betty to Rouse.
Yeah. Oh, she would have loved it. She would have loved Rouse. Okay. So let's get into this episode. General thoughts. Vince, what'd you think of this episode?
Yeah. Another great one. Really enjoyed this episode. Strong arcs all the way through. But all this time, I thought that I was clever comparing Don to America as, you know, this guy that has no past, only mm-hmm. only acquisitiveness. And then I realized, like, oh, in this episode, he just, like, basically says all the themes out loud. And maybe I was just remembering those instead of, like, being clever. But yeah, great episode, sort of about what a brilliant salesman Don is, but also shows that cronyism beats salesmanship every time.
Yeah. Emma, what'd you think of this episode?
I love this episode. I think season 2 is probably my favorite season, although I really think, like, 2 through 5 is just when the show is at its absolute peak.
Yes.
I love this episode, and particularly the juxtaposition both for Peggy and Don between, like, the two different sides of themselves, Don's home life versus his work life. And then Peggy's trying to implement the advice that Don gave her at the end of season 1 about you only move forward or
right.
however he says it. But what, you know, the good or what the buttoned up Tom Hanks kid is represents for her is that she can't necessarily escape her past. But what I also like about how Peggy is depicted is that relationship is one in which she's kind of manipulated into feeling guilt. And Don does the same stuff to her throughout the series. Like, I gave this to you. And you can just see, like, even though she's a woman in that time that is so progressive and ahead of her time, how even the relationships that are, you know, more fruitful to her, there still is a power imbalance and a manipulative dynamic in there.
Right, right.
So, like, her religious upbringing is pulling her back, you know, through manipulation. But even though she's drawn more towards the advertising world, she still has to navigate that through Don as well, although that relationship obviously evolves.
Yeah, it's like she has two priests. Like, now she has Father Gil, yeah. but the other one is her work priest, Don Draper.
And she's working on a Sunday throughout the three Sundays depicted throughout the episode, and she's working as religion and her... You know, I guess she's Norwegian on her dad's side, and her mom is Irish Catholic, I think. And that's what it's not a Lutheran church. It's got to be Catholic.
It's Catholic.
It's definitely Catholic. I mean, I'm
Norwegian, and that side's Lutheran, and they're kind of Catholic-y. Like, they're repressed in similar ways. And
right.
That's my WASPy side, but, like, no, it's definitely Catholic. I think.
Do only Catholics have confession, or are there other?
Yeah, so it's got to be Catholic, I think.
Well,
yeah.
I think the tell that it's Catholic is in the scene where they're doing grace, and he starts out, like, trying to speak from the heart, and
then
Peggy's mom is just like, "So, are you going
to
do the grace? Because Catholicism, we don't speak directly to God; we only say the magic words,
right?
Right.
They're like, you're God, yeah. So, I have that scene. I love that scene right here.
Would you honor us and say grace?
Certainly. Oh Lord, thank you for this wonderful feast. Thank you for these people and this parish and their home.
It was beautiful. Are you going to say grace now?
Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts we are about to receive.
The sigh.
Don't you dare speak extemporaneously. That's some Protestant bullshit. Yeah. We need to get you to get that far off look in your eyes as you just speak the magic words in the rote way that you've been trained.
She was like offended by his modern, like, informal approach, which I really, really enjoyed. Yeah. She's a great character, Peggy.
Yeah, kind of low key yell at a priest who's visiting your home is very funny.
Yeah, to guilt the priest,
right? As she's just like so, they're in such adoration that he's there. I mean, they take a photo with him.
Yes,
as if, you know, it's like Tom Hanks is in town. Or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I do think this sort of explains why
his dad. I didn't mean to do that. He was on the brain, keep going. Yeah.
I feel like this is why the younger generation, when they get into religion, it's usually like into like Catholicism and Eastern Orthodox, because it's like the millennial generation, like the whole thing with it was like, oh, we're gonna reinvent the church and there's gonna be cool pastors that are like, right, how do you do, fellow kids, and try to make it cool.
Yeah.
And then all the younger kids were like,
and love God.
Yeah. Right. And all the younger kids are like, no, in order for me to like believe in the magic, you need to you need to do all the rote traditions and speak the magic words, so that, you know, I'm too busy, I've been pandered to and lied to too many times to put any stock in that anymore. So we're going back to rote traditions and
which kind of makes sense to me, because it's
magical incantations.
Like if you're
it makes
going,
sense to me too.
Yeah, if you're going to be a part of organized religion, you want someone who's, you want like the, I don't know, the theatrical nature of it. You want it to be fucking weird and almost inaccessible, right?
It's like when you do drugs, it's like partly about the presentation, right? Like it's partly about the ritual of like getting your drugs out and, you know, laying them out
right
before you and doing things just so like you're cooking, because there's like a, I don't know, there's like an inherent magic to just like doing, like doing the ritual, like doing the ritual, 100%. Like it's always been done. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm sloppier than you guys. I'm just after the high, but I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, it's funny to me because you're playing that hilarious Sopranos esque theme earlier.
Right? Yeah.
But there are so many in these prestige TV shows storylines with women wanting to fuck priests. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Carmella, mm-hmm. Carmella and like all of Peggy's family, also
that's right.
Fleabag. That's
I was
going to
say,
yep.
It doesn't go mm-hmm. away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It really is like some sort of like, I think, fantasy, or the writers like exploring the tension that's so laid bare by, you know, religion and modernity and, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff.
I thought this
guilt.
Yeah. This one was interesting because in the setup to Colin Hanks's character, like everybody is sort of like kissing up to him, like to mm-hmm. show how good they are. And I got the sense like, oh man, this guy must be so fucking tired of everyone like trying to virtue signal to him. Like he's going to put a good word in for him.
Yeah.
So then when he hears about Peggy, he's going to, you know, he likes her because she's not trying to impress him with her with her purity. And then, but then he still is a dick to her.
But
anyway.
Then he judges her, right? Like he does a good job, Hanks does, of mm-hmm. in that final shot giving her the egg of, you know, acting as if he is being benevolent, but she senses the judgment and it's kind of apparent behind his eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great scene. I have a clip of, if we haven't said so, the character Father Gill is played by Tom Hanks' son, and I have a clip of him at the end of this episode.
Oh my God. Big up the whole island, massive. It's your boy Chetana coming straight from the Golden Gloves. You watching? My father Tom Hanks presenting, and I watch soon forward come. Big up, tune in.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah, I think you got Matt. I think you got the wrong Hanks son there.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. No, he actually has two sons. That one's That one's Rita Wilson's son.
Okay. My bad. The point is that this Hanks son does a great job. He's really good at playing priest.
So Chet Hanks is on the Netflix like basketball show. I forget what it's called. Running Point, I think it's called. Playing He's playing like a white basketball player with a lot of tattoos.
He's acting in something.
Sort of. I mean, he's acting like himself, but
still.
Do you remember the story where he like went to some recovery fest where he just like he just like berated the audience until they were like he was just very like aggressive and was like, you know, shouting. He was doing the recovery thing, but in a very like confrontational way.
Oh no, I don't remember this, but that sounds amazing.
it was a great story.
I want to look that up.
Yeah, I wish I could find it now.
He like shared at like a what an AA fucking meeting.
Here we go. I think I found it. Chet Hanks' Winnipeg speaking engagement went about as well as you
Winnipeg.
Would expect. Yeah. Video has emerged of Hanks.
Me flew to Winnipeg for this.
Video has emerged of Hanks in the Manitoba capital last Saturday, where he was slated to speak at Recovery Day Winnipeg, an event aiming to build awareness, challenge societal stigma, and celebrate the role that recovery plays in improving life.
Sick.
Per the website, Hanks was the event's headline speaker in a lineup that also included Canada's Drag Race alumni Juice Box, Boa, Kendall Gender and Chaos, and American actor Tony Denison. Sure.
Okay. I don't know who that is.
A star-studded event.
Yeah. A TikTok posted by user Saveja shows Hanks at one point pacing the stage, asking the crowd, "Any of you guys got a problem with the word God?"
Oh, I do remember this.
Oh my God. Honestly, it sounds like Kanye.
Yeah.
Hanks tells the onlookers that if you've got a problem with the word God, they should get the fuck over themselves. And I mean that with love, brother.
I love being yelled at with love. That is like an NA staple. That does happen.
Right. He's talking to the audience like he's their abusive parent.
Exactly.
The video then jumps ahead to find Hanks asking, "You want to drink fucking knockoff RC Cola or real motherfucking Coke?"
Hell yeah.
He's over his Coke problem.
After another jump cut, the video identifies a parent approaching the stage to ask him to clean up his language. Hanks appears to laugh off the parent's request and tells them and their children to leave before jeering, "Watch your fucking mouth. Come on up here, buddy. I don't think you can."
Just yelling at a child. "Come up here and say bombaclat. You can't do it the way I can." Well,
See, I'm used to this shit, you guys, he continues. "Pardon my language for the children, but I speak from the heart and I speak bluntly. If you don't want your children to be exposed to profanity, just take them somewhere else right now, respectfully."
Oh, I love when you say respectfully at the end of doing massive disrespect to me. There's nothing better.
If you guys are looking at me right now and you're thinking, he probably thinks he's so much fucking better than me. Fuck this guy. Like that kook that was up here a few seconds ago. I don't care today. I don't care. It is what it is.
Well, I heard a lot of recovery. Here's the thing about 12-step is like you look for the similarities, not the differences. And I see a lot of parallels between me and Chet Hayes.
Hanks goes on to share how he never stopped the daily burpee regimen, even ahead of taking the stage in Winnipeg, because, quote, "It elevates my state of mind."
All right.
Before telling the Recovery Day crowd about his experience in rehab.
All right. No more. Sorry. I'm sorry so I good. Brought it up.
It was so good. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I love an aggressive recovery guy.
Me too. So let's get into Mad Men. I love this episode too. Don's marriage is being ruined by two Bobbies, and I enjoy that a lot.
Yes,
that's what I got from this. We have a little bit of Bobby Barrett in this. Bobby just kind of comes in to tell Don that she has a great idea for a TV show. It's Candid Camera, but starring her husband. And they're going to call it Grin and Barrett, which, I mean, great name.
Very 60s television title.
100%.
The network would eat that up.
Yeah, definitely. It was the love it or leave it of its time. A lot of great storylines. This episode is broken down into three different Sundays. I had to look it up because I was like, what does this title mean? I know it's three different Sundays, but is there something more than that? So apparently there's Passion Sunday, Palm Sunday, and Easter Sunday, which I didn't know that there was a thing called Passion Sunday. I assume
Me neither.
Passion Sunday is the Sunday when Jesus was crucified? Is that it? Is that, I don't know.
Again, right. I'm like a lapsed Unitarian. Like, they didn't even say sometimes the gender of the, we'd go on Easter and we'd go on Christmas. And it was mostly an excuse for my mom to be able to sing.
I love that. that's a good enough reason. I like that.
Yeah.
I like God because he allows me to sing with my friends.
Basically.
Yeah. So, you know, Peggy's storyline, you know, we talked about a bit, so let's just get through that. Peggy is trying to leave the church a little bit early and runs into Father Gill, played by Colin Hanks, who is yelling at some kids the way priests do. And they immediately kind of like, I don't know what it is, like the connection that they have is, I mean, obviously there's like the kind of like sexual or lustful undertones, but she's trying to like get out and he is able to convince her to go back in and watch
well,
the rest
he's
of the
also
sermon.
he's smoking so he indicates he's a more modern version, perhaps a more accessible version of her religion that she's been eschewing,
right?
And at the end of season one, when, or maybe it's not at the end of season one. Actually, it's not. It's in the suitcase, I think, when Dawn asks her about if she thinks about the child that she gave away.
Oh, yeah.
And she says playground. So, like, the fact that he's talking, yelling at kids in the opening scene where he meets her, I think, is symbolic of, like, he's representative of the guilt she feels and the loss that she feels.
Right.
Which is, like, I mean, I was praising Hanks earlier, and he does a really good job here, but I still just think, in terms of like the overall series, that despite the Scientology of it all, Elizabeth Olsen is just able to convey so much with so little.
Yeah.
Able to both be vulnerable but also fearsome and intelligent always. Like, I just think she's such an actress that can play, you know, play with the complexity of an individual so well. And like, I think The Handmaid's Tale is a mixed bag, but this is obvious. I just think it's an even more impressive performance here because of how just Peggy wrestles with so much throughout the series.
Yeah, she's really like, it's interesting because the first season,
I mean, Scientology might not be good for society, but it's great for actors. Like, they like, obviously it's like the religion that you do if you want to be good at acting.
I mean, yeah, it's the chicken and egg thing. I think, like, because they go after actors specifically, I don't know whether or not Scientology makes you a good actor. I just think that Scientology is everywhere where in the entertainment industry is. She is great. I don't know too much about her being a Scientologist. I know that she is one, I think. But despite that, she's fucking great. And Peggy Olson is one of those characters that initially in the first season, while I was just like, you know, yeah, as an interesting character, but look at Dawn. He's so cool. You know, my first time around, I was just like, you know, I don't care about this. I only care about Dawn. He drinks at work. That guy's cool. And now I'm, you know, obsessed with how great of a character Peggy Olson is. So she is. Oh no. Is that producer Brent?
Yeah. Were you guys talking about Scientology?
Yeah, we love it.
Okay. Yes. Okay. It's just making sure we're being very careful.
Yeah.
I live close enough to the buildings. I think they can hear everything that's going on. So
they
just
can.
Be cool.
Yeah.
But also,
thanks,
we should do some ads.
In.
Yeah. No problem. I'm here to help. You know. And also, we have ads for e-readers. Sorry. What do they use?
E-meters.
E-meters. Yeah.
That's right. Well, Brent is right. It is time for us to take our quick commercial break to sell you some e-meters to read all the thetans in your body. So please stick around. We will be right back. And we're back. This is Mad Yourself a Man here with guest Emma Viglin. How are you doing, Emma?
I'm doing great.
He's Larry King all of a sudden.
I like it. To finish up Peggy's storyline, you know, like we said, Father Gill
they meet outside because neither of them really want to be inside that with all those assholes in there.
Sure.
So they're sort of like, hey, we're avoiding this thing together.
Yeah, but Father Gill comes over to the house. They've invited Father Gill over, and Jerry, who I'm not sure, is that her...
It's her brother-in-law.
Her brother-in-law. That's what I figured. Jerry's splayed out on the couch. He injured his back and cannot get up to...
But you see, like, the contrast in why her sister has this rivalry, too, and this jealousy of her.
Yes.
Like, her husband is very much a continuation of their more, like, working-class Brooklyn yeah. life.
Oh, you're right. Too good for me? You don't want to marry a guy who works throwing frozen meat right. into a truck?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, seeing that guy splayed out like that, and then, you know, you see why they're impressed that she works on Madison Avenue or how...
Right.
You know, what was such a good... true to and it's just it's a great portrayal frankly of a mother and a daughter not to say too much but like
yeah.
you know how Peggy's mom brags about her job to other people
yes.
but never says it to her
yes yes
gotta be honest I've experienced that and been like why don't you say that to me like
yeah.
you know like yeah. Emma was on TV the other night like oh, okay cool
yeah but, no there's a great moment where they're talking to Father Gill her sister and her mother and they're like you know Peggy works on Madison Avenue and Peggy is like you know I didn't even you guys I didn't know that you guys knew where I worked. Like
yeah,
you guys have
right.
literally never said a single kind thing about the job that I have or the life I've chosen, but you
right.
feel fit to brag to the fucking priest about it. And yeah, Father Gill is like very clearly interested in Peggy, but you're still, you know, not entirely sure what it's about. It's just that Sopranos thing where you're like, I assume it's just like part of being a priest is being like
desperately horny at all the time
yeah
driven and by also, your sexual like you know desires but acting as if it's like benevolent
yeah and
well,
also
it's that thing the, like do you ever I mean I'm sure you've had relationships where you're like oh man I'm so into this and then you
right.
get to the sex part and you're like oh, weird. It's like all that stuff was just, you know, my horniness making me think a certain
right.
way. And when it...
Yeah. No, that right. that was my experience when I was with Vince's mom. And I feel like it was, you know, it's just like with Gil, with Father Gil, I feel like he is, and this is kind of the meme or, you know, the trope with the kind of like... sexualized Catholic priest thing is that it's like because of the fact that this can never be it's like half of the like intrigue about it is just kind of
right.
like you know it's the repression is part of the game you know it's
yeah
like a,
I also just think I feel like he probably generally can't tell benevolent feelings from horny feelings because he's never allowed to act
right.
on them
yeah
because
yep.
he's a Catholic yeah. And but what's interesting about this is I'm not really entirely sure what Peggy is feeling because Peggy isn't doing the Carmela thing where she's you know lavishing him with attention she's like mostly being like I have to go
mm-hmm.
and
because she wants to move forward like
right.
Don told her but
yeah.
Don does isn't he's ignorant about his own ability to do that Peggy
right.
is more in touch with her humanity than Don is
yeah
so she can't just move forward in the way Don can and numb himself with drinking and smoking and women
right
and eventually obviously it catches up but that's what she's trying to be that but she's also sees the world differently than Don as a woman and
yeah.
I think that's part of what they're portraying
yeah
and she, the theme is that they are two sides of the same coin he is a son without a mother and she is a mother without a son
mm.
and they together are the you know,
Captain Planet oh wait no where are we going
yeah.
yeah yeah I mean it's interesting too because he's I feel like Father Gill is the one who's clearly like sending the most clear signals that he's the one who is I don't know, kind of going after her, you know, pursuing
gonna,
her.
Right. You know, and then I'm sure she's sort of like, okay, well, how modern of a priest is he, really?
Yeah, right, well, yeah. I know you smoke, but what else do you do, Father?
yeah.
And she's
what else
like,
do you do with that mouth?
Yeah, what else you do with that mouth, Father? And, you know, she says she has to go, and he goes, oh, look at the time. I got to go, too. Can I put you in my car? And he asks her to essentially punch up a sermon he's going to give, and you know, she does it. Gil comes back to the Olsons later, and Peggy's sister is super jealous, and later
I think part of Gil's thing is like, hey, I don't want to be stuck in here with all these apple polishers alone. Like, I need like one other sane person in here to
Regular person.
Yes, but someone who isn't trying to impress me.
Right. And Peggy's sister is super jealous of the fact that this celebrity that they know, a priest, is more interested in, you know, hanging out with her than he is in hanging out with all of them. So she goes to confession and she's like, you know,
she finds a great shit talking loophole.
Amazing way to snitch on Peggy, which is to confess about her jealousy and her
her jealousy. She basically is saying that she's angry at her, although really she's jealous of the priest. Like, she's not saying that, but that's what she should be confessing.
Right. She should be confessing, forgive me, Father, for I am about to sin. And that sin is called snitching out of envy. And it's so funny because in that like scene, she's like, what about me? What about me being good? And it's like, you are literally right now just snitching on your sister to someone out of pure fucking envy. Like,
yeah. Oh, you think she's so cool. Let's see how cool you think she is when I tell you about her secret son.
Exactly. And like, you know, I think it's a, you know, it's a very human thing to, you know, have that kind of feeling about, like, you know, you see it a lot. I mean, people who float through life and you're like, why aren't you constantly, you know, filled with feelings of anguish and regret? We do that because we just assume the other person is doesn't feel that way, you know?
It mirrors how Betty reacted to Helen Bishop and her independence as a single. I don't know if that's even happened yet. I'm getting mixed up.
Yeah, yeah. No. That was season one. Yeah.
And her jealousy basically of her independence and her feeling okay about being alone. And so she acts out. She hits her too. Mm-hmm. And it's similar in the way that Peggy's independence makes her sister feel inadequate. So she has, like, it's not just the priest's attention. It's that, like, I did all the right things. I'm in the community. I'm religious. I have not sinned in this way. And she still gets the attention.
It's also part of that American thing where we only want like a perfect victim of anything. So it's like anyone that something bad happens to, it's like, oh, how dare you have the audacity to not spend your entire life grieving or like feeling sad or guilty or whatever. Like,
And then to end that storyline, Father Gil and Peggy are talking. Father Gil gives Peggy an Easter egg and says it's for the little one. Damn. She's been outed and is being judged by a priest, which, to be fair, is a priest.
Here's
job.
A nice egg to replace your rotten one.
Replace all the rotten eggs. So moving on, Don and Betty's storyline is the bulk of the episode, and it's pretty fantastic. So in the first Sunday, the Don and Betty are waking up, and they're about to have sex, and then the kids walk in.
This is as good as his home life has ever looked to start the episode, and then it completely devolves at the end.
Except he's such a fucking party pooper that the only thing that makes him horny is canceling plans.
That's true.
But
I'm
right there with him. There's a moment right after this, right after Sally pours the most ridiculously strong Bloody Mary I've ever seen, where they're listening to music. And Betty is saying, like, oh, you know, this, I love this song. I used to dance to it in high school. Don, dance with me. And he goes, I thought we weren't doing anything today. That is so fucking fun. Like, I've never.
And they're wasted at the end of the episode. They forget to feed Sally and Bobby, and because they're so drunk and like playing on the bed at the very end.
Oh, it's so great. It's so funny. Meanwhile, Bobby is acting out. He is fucking with the record player, and Betty is yelling at him.
I don't know if it's being a toddler dad, but oh my God, I get like so defensive of little Bobby.
Poor
like
Bobby.
throughout this entire episode. I mean, he's very cute also, but yeah.
Yeah, and Dawn, you know, says it at the end of the episode where it was basically like, compared to me at that age, you know, he is a great fucking kid, you know? And you know, compared to, I think, a lot of kids his age, like, he's not really doing anything out of the ordinary. It's just Betty, I think, is, you know, Betty is punishing Bobby.
For Dawn.
Yeah, yeah, it's like punishing.
Well, she's also taking
Dawn
it personally to some extent, where she tells him not to do something and he does that exact thing.
Right, which
is what little boys love to do.
Exactly, exactly.
Especially with their moms.
Yes.
Right.
And she is not having it, and she's doing the like classic, you know, I think a person who grew up with privilege thing, where she's just like, you know, Dawn, your father beat you, and look how you turned out. Acting like Dawn isn't filled with emotional scars. Like,
right.
It is
right.
So
well,
funny.
This is also the classic parenting thing of like the kid doing something and one parent looking at the other parent going, are you going to do something? And it's like,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, neither of us know what to do at this point. And then we're both like looking to each other for answers.
Right.
There is no answer because, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, do you hit them? You don't know what to do. It's
no.
Like, you know, Karina stole, like there was a party at a park that we weren't, you know, it wasn't our party. And she just went up to the table where all the food was and just went, donut, and then took a donut. And then all the parents, you know, were looking at her, and they looked at me, and I was like, do I hit her? I don't know what to do. She just does that. But yeah, it's like watching Bobby kind of like be just a toddler and Betty freak out is very funny. Bobby jumps on the bed and breaks it. And then, at one point, Bobby,
oh, like it was Bobby jumping on the bed. That was his problem.
Right.
The problem, and not this parent's fat ass. Just like,
yeah. I was like, how did he do that? With
it was
his
the
35 force.
Pounds of toddler that was doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah. And then, later he is, Dawn is making some pancakes, and, Bobby is just hypnotized by the bubbling and somehow puts his mouth on the griddle.
Yeah.
Which is,
well, well, that's horrible. But like with the Bobby connection subtext or whatever, later on, Bobby mm-hmm. and Dawn get into that car accident.
Exactly.
So there are, you know, parallels of Dawn hurting a Bobby and sending the Bobby to the hospital. I think she gets sent to the hospital.
Yeah.
Accident. But yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, there's a lot of injured Bobbies that are happening via Dawn's negligence. And, He turns away for a second to take a phone call from Duck, saying that Shell Keneally has called and we're gonna be pitching American Airlines.
I like how no one tells him to, like, hey, shut the fuck up about Shell Keneally. If you say Shell Keneally one more time, I'm gonna pistol whip you.
You don't need to do the full name. Who else is named Shell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Well, also just the thing where you call him by his nickname, like his cute little nickname. That's such like a older rich guy thing. This whole storyline I loved because it is doing the exact Sopranos playbook where it's like you have a protagonist who's kind of terrible, but you surround him with people that are even worse so that you you end up like, you know, like you have this rooting interest in Dawn in this situation because it's
right.
Like, man, I hope he rat fucks Duck Phillips somehow because this guy sucks.
Yes. Before we get into that, just to finish off Bobby's storyline, Bobby later is playing with a robot at the dinner table and accidentally spills some milk. And then
that is like so 1,000% my child. Like he's always playing with his robot toy at the dinner table and spilling shit. Like that's
it's accurate. It's what kids do. And you know, Betty is had it up to here with Bobby and is like, Dawn, do something. And I have that clip.
Bobby, stop playing with the robot. Bobby, what did I just say?
It was an accident.
You don't listen. Dawn, do something.
So Don shoots Bobby and then goes to jail, and that's the end of Mad Men. No, he throws the robot against the wall, and then they get into this huge fight. And I mean, at this point, I'm like, well, Betty, I understand what he did was extreme and, you know, out of anger, but like, you want him to hit Bobby.
Yeah, so what do you want him to do? What's there? The what difference do something here? To you? Yeah.
Right. And at the end,
but she's that betrays the fact that she's just not emotionally mature enough to confront Don about what she knows, like what she knows the whole time is his infidelity.
Yes, exactly. And is punishing Bobby through it. You know, like throughout the season, Bobby has been kind of like the, you know, the whipping boy, kind of paying for Don's crimes. At one point, I think it was last episode or the episode before, Betty's talking shit about the fact that Bobby was tracing instead of drawing, you know, George Washington. And it was just so clear that like her whole thing was like, this is when the lies start. One day.
Exactly. You men.
But you start out tracing something and passing it off as your own. The next thing you know, you're fucking your secretary.
You're tracing your finger down some whore.
Exactly.
I have a vivid memory of trying to pass off a Shel Silverstein poem to my parents as my own at age 7.
Yes.
So pretty sure everybody goes through this.
Yeah. I in kindergarten, I would like just open up the encyclopedia and, you know, it was like the section on what atoms are, and I would just write down exactly what it said. Mm-hmm. And someone like an older authority figure called me out on it, like a teacher. So it wasn't homework, it was extracurricular. And what I was really trying to do was to, like, you know, show that I, number one, could write, not like write my own thoughts, but someone else's. But also like kind of signal an interest in it. And this, like, I don't know, teacher's aide was just like, that's plagiarism. And I was like, what the fuck? So first time I heard that word, and I was like, I'm 6.
Feel shame.
Yeah. But then there's a great scene where Bobby and Don talk together, and it's like, I loved this scene at the end where he, you know, just he's talking about his daddy, and it was just like, you know, and then he died. And then he says,
this is my favorite.
He says, we need to get you a new daddy. And I was like, I think I'm finna cry right now. It's like one of the most beautiful
And John Hamm does such a good job of going off into like a distant memory, talking about the candy that his dad used to like.
It tastes like violets.
Right, right.
What did he like to eat? Ham.
Ham.
It sounds like a real winner. Ham and candy. The abusive farmer dad.
Abusive farmer. All of the major two food groups.
Right.
And then finally at the end of, you know, this particular arc, Don explains to Betty that, like, you know, my dad beat the shit out of me, and all it made me want to do was fantasize about killing my dad. And at that moment, Betty says, like, I didn't know that. And then I start to feel that empathy for Betty again, where I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Dawn is not thing.
Yeah, he doesn't tell her anything, and she's stuck all day with these kids. So, of course, she's going to be more fed up with the kids because she's had to deal with them, like, you know, all day.
Yeah. And that's wanted, too. All she says this when she eventually discovers his identity is like, all I ever wanted was you to open up to me, or all I ever wanted was you. So, like, you see that if he had just allowed himself to share more with her, their marriage could have had a chance. Like, it's on a rewatch, it's a heartbreaking scene because he's in a prison of his own making.
Yes. Yeah. It's a bummer. And, you know, but he, I don't think he's going to change, folks. If you're hoping for Don to make a serious change, you will be sorely disappointed. But let's talk about what happens at the office during this time. Because of the fact that Bobby has to go to the ER and Don has to go into the office, Sally has to go with Don to work, which is incredible And it just an incredible sequence of events that happens. She's so damn cute. She's adorable, and she is just like wreaking havoc wherever she goes. She's throwing her gum on the ground.
I find the boy so much cuter than Sally. I feel like Sally's like, there's something contrived about her. We're like, oh, let's give her like the cute speech impediment that we gave every child actor.
I think that was natural. I think that's what her speech impediment was.
Yeah, but
was.
They cast them all. I don't know. That was such like a casting trope in those days where it's like, okay, we have to have a precocious little girl with like a lisp.
Yeah, I think you hate women, but the thing is,
it's the Mrs. Doubtfire thing where it's like, oh my god, okay.
Oh,
the Matilda girl?
Yeah.
Oh, she's great. Adorable.
Everyone loves her. Yeah. I think you just have an anti-Matilda bias.
No, I have an anti like speech impediments are cute thing. Like that bugs me. Like it's fine if it's natural, but now you're making it worse by making them a child actor. You're like consciously
that's
constantly
true.
Retarding their progress.
Okay, well maybe try not using the R word.
We can say it now.
Oh, that's right. Elon's president.
Right, on Elon Musk's Twitter. Yeah.
Yes, comedy is legal. So she goes in the office and she is just, you know, she's going up to Joan and is like, you have big ones.
Mommy has big ones.
Yeah, she's just talking about titties with Joan.
Joan's like, I seen your mommies. Ain't nothing special.
Yeah, my fiance and I quote that all the time. Yeah. My mommy has big ones. And then also later with Grandpa Gene, I forget, in that episode where Bobby said Sally wants peaches from the grocery store, and Bobby says, peaches give me a rash. And Grandpa Gene goes, your sister likes them. And then he shuts up. So. Those are good. Those are my most quotable. Anyway, keep
going.
That.
I love it. She also goes into Paul Kinsey's office and is like, let's have a conversation. Looks at a picture of a black woman in a picture frame and is like, is that your maid? And she's a child. What can you do?
Yeah.
I
want to see her annoying Paul Kinsey like all day.
Oh, yeah. That was great. I could watch that forever.
I love the touch of the prominently displayed photo. I mean, that relationship lasted, like 3 months?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even remember how that relationship ended in the show.
I do, maybe I won't spoil it because you're coming up, but it's perfect.
So excited for it.
Yeah.
It's funny. I didn't actually realize, yes, he has a prominent photo of his black girlfriend, just in case you didn't know why he's dating a woman of color. It's because he wants people to know it. And the look on his face when he's like, no, that's my girlfriend. And then immediately Sally is just like, oh, okay. Do you guys ever fuck?
Yeah.
Do you ever lie on top of each other? That was amazing. And then Paul realizes that he's having this conversation with a child, not just any child, but the daughter of his boss. And then later, she definitely dropped gum on the floor and caused Bert Cooper to step on some gum.
Got Duck Phillips's chinless secretary in trouble.
Yeah, almost got her fired.
Although you see how Duck has the opportunity to be a more decent human being, and he regularly makes the wrong choice, but that was a nice moment that adds more complexity to his character. I just think like that actor makes that character so much better because of his damn 1950s, 1960s voice. I mean, he has got that old Hollywood voice.
Yeah.
He might be an even more detestable piece of shit than Pete. Like, this guy makes me hate
Pete's
him
better
so
at
much.
Pete is way better at his job, which eventually becomes better, which you start to respect more than Duck.
Well, like, Pete's goal is to like fit in and have people like him, which is more respectable than Duck, where Duck is like constantly trying to like outmaneuver people on the corporate ladder.
Right. Yeah. He is very much about like status and being boss. Like with him, he's like, you hired me to be boss. And
he's almost like more of a lickspittle than Pete is.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, this is it's only going to get worse from here after the end of this episode when it comes to Duck. But yeah, he does have an opportunity to, you know, just let this woman be fired. And instead is like, just, you know, go get lunch and don't worry, he'll forget all about you. Like that, I thought that was a decent thing.
The question is that about him being nice to her, or is that about him asserting his authority as her boss and being the one who decides her fate because he is her master and not...
It's a good question. It's a bit of both, I think. But, you know, I think...
Because he does have a large ego.
True.
Yeah.
But
also,
yeah.
Where is the drunk guy in this episode? Why is he not there?
Oh, Freddie?
Where is Joel Murray? Why was he not in this episode?
Well, it's Sunday. It's, what is it?
We just assume he's fucked up somewhere.
Yeah, it's Passion Sunday. He's just like, well, I'm not going to fucking work.
Maybe they didn't put Freddie on American Airlines, poor guy.
Yeah, I could see them not wanting to fuck it up by having Freddie Rumsen around. And then also, I just want to point out, at one point, Sally sees some liquor, and later she's asleep with an empty cup of liquor.
That felt like a stretch to me, because do you remember what liquor tasted or smelled like when you were a little kid?
Yeah, the fact that she would actually drink it is kind of amazing to me.
But, well, she's trying to emulate her dad, right? Like, that's, I guess, part of it. But do you see how Bobby Barrett... you know, blows Don in the office when previously his affairs were with Midge and you know, that was kind of in her apartment.
Right.
They were going out to the clubs in the West Village or whatever.
Right.
Now it's closer to home. And in season three, again, we're spoiling, right? He has an affair with Sally's teacher, which is even closer to home.
That's
so
right.
I think the affairs and then having Sally come to the office where that just occurred.
Yeah.
When season three eventually everything comes to a head for him, it's these affairs culminating in like him taking more and more risk and unraveling, even though he doesn't realize it yet, and trying to blow up his life subconsciously because it keeps getting closer to his home life.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think it's also, you know, unreasonable to assume that this wouldn't be the first time she snuck a little.
I mean,
sip
she
of
is
liquor.
His bartender, so she's probably a little more used to like the smell of liquor than maybe we were as children.
Yeah. So they're all getting together. They're all trying to figure out what this pitch is going to be for American Airlines. One of my favorite moments in this sequence is Sal is basically pitching the TV commercial. And I have a clip of this. It's like, this right here is why Sal draws, doesn't talk.
Music you can talk over.
La da da.
Stewardesses. We're going to bookend every spot with the plane taking off and landing, up, down, no problems, everything okay, every commercial.
That's a great idea, Sal. There's not even going to be any crashes in your commercial for American Airlines. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even like notice how clumsy that was. And
I loved it. It's so
it's
good.
Perfect.
Yeah, and he just delivers it so well as he's talking, realizing, what am I saying? What am I saying? Don gives this great speech that I pulled, and I'm going to play that as well.
I mean, this is like the nut graph of Mad Men, I would say.
Yeah.
American Airlines is not about the past any more than America is. Ask not about Cuba. Ask not about the bomb. We're going to the moon. Throw everything out.
Everything?
There is no such thing as American history. Only a frontier. That crash happened to somebody else. It's not about apologies for what happened. It's about those seven men in the room on Friday and what airline they are going to be running.
So, what does that mean?
Let's pretend we know what 1963 looks like.
And then he goes into his office and everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
He's so good at like when you're watching it as someone who doesn't have to work in at Sterling Cooper, you're just like, yeah, man, that. And anyone who has to like somehow build a pitch deck from this is just like, Okay, so what do you? What, I don't know what it means. You want us to draw future?
Yeah, but his but he's doing his job, which is to manage expectations of the client, which is like I'm selling you on the dream of this ad, not the reality of this ad. The ad is just going to be like a stupid jingle and some fucking pictures put together. But here is why you're going to think it's great.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the thing is with Don, he's so good that if he had been given the chance, I think he could have actually sold it. But he is not given the chance on the day Easter. But,
so yeah. So I mean, he's saying like there is no American history where there's only a frontier. This isn't even the same airline that it was when it crashed. Right. And the problem is like this isn't even the same executive suite as it was when you planned this pitch.
Right. Yes.
Like now it's different. It's different people. It's
right.
Just,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it also is as to it, with him being America, it's an extension of his philosophy of only moving forward, which he's applying to this. But it's also like, you know, that's the oldest, like, I think trope in America is like, is the frontier land, it's the romanticization of colonization and genocide.
Yes.
But like, that is also what he's representing there when you erase that memory of what we did to create this country.
Well, yeah,
it's also applicable to Israel, which, you know, in season one, there's a speech about Zion. Not saying that Matthew Weiner is consciously unpacking what's in our news right now,
right.
But it is something that I think is a very well done artistic maneuver.
Yes. I mean, yeah, that's the classic. Why would we fix anything or help people? Like, we don't have to help people that need help. Like, you can just go that way. Just keep going towards
the
frontier.
Yeah,
find an open space to do what you want.
Yeah.
Like,
what about all those people?
Help you.
There's a trail of dead behind me. Don't look.
Right.
Keep going forward.
Yeah, keep going forward.
This train doesn't stop for no man nor
going to the
native.
Moon.
Yeah, we're going straight to the moon.
Free real estate.
Yeah. We're going to go to the moon. We're going to slide on a sea of blood. it's free real estate. I think he could have sold it, but he doesn't get a chance to. Duck shows up. They're doing a Friday pitch, and Duck shows up and says, Shell Keneally has just been fired. And they have to still pitch their thing to American Airlines, but it's a stillborn, as they call it. Big bummer. Duck is like, my bad. Sorry for making us lose an airline in order to possibly get an airline.
You can tell he's just that annoying capitalist. Like,
yes.
He would be all in on the riskiest Wall Street moves if that was the field.
Right. This dude would be a crypto guy 100%. And Don is pissed. Meanwhile, Roger is like, I don't know, the chase is fun. Roger's storyline is very kind of like separate from, I think, this entire episode. It's Roger.
I did enjoy him not respecting his son-in-law at all. He sees
I thought that was great.
Like, this guy really is a little bitch.
He's not even ordering for his wife. He's letting his wife order for him or his girlfriend.
Right. But Roger saying to Don that it's the thrill of the chase after he
just
had enough
sex.
Right. Like, like, you can see how he wanted it to be like a consensual fling. Like, he heard his wife talk about the romance of their wedding.
Yes.
And for a second he felt bad, but it wasn't like, oh, let me make this relationship work. Let me use my vast wealth to pay for a replication of that experience, which is entirely inauthentic. So, like, it's also representative of his, you know, he has the, who is he chasing as an ad executive right
no
now?
Idea.
He's there to maintain that lucky strike. That is basically his role. So he's, you can see he's like a phony in both of those instances.
Yes. Yeah. And it's kind of sad to watch his interactions with Vicky, because like what he's paying for, like, you keep thinking is like, no, but I want what I want. And you know, it's got this obvious.
And we took her out to dinner after,
right,
after
right.
having sex.
Exactly.
Right.
The sexual undertone is there, but really, the thing he wants is like, I just kind of want to have a passionate kiss with you for $100.
Yeah, yeah.
Then,
me.
And then I want to take you to the nicest restaurant we have now, and you know, and then I would like us to walk in the rain under an umbrella. It's just
right.
It's really heartbreaking because it's like you're, you know, he's.
And we love Roger, even with his his flaws.
His foibles make him more lovable somehow. It's probably why he keeps fucking up. But just a really funny moment in that scene where he says, you know, I'm not in good health. And she says, don't worry, you know, despite what they say, no one dies from this. And it's like, no, last season he actually had a massive coronary heart attack having sex with a twin. So I think he's...
was more exciting because it was... you know, semi-consensual.
Right, exactly.
This
right.
one is paid for, so it's like,
yeah. Yeah, that's true. And yeah, and that is the episode. And guys, if I think we have to rate it, and if I had to give this episode a letter grade, I think I'd give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Wow, that's a bold statement. I mean, if I was a grading man, and I am, I would have to give it... solid B+.
Wow. Okay. Emma Viglin, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
I'm going to one up you guys. A-.
A-.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to break the mold.
Okay.
Break the mold.
I didn't even know that was a grade.
I'm putting myself
out there.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, if I had to average that all together, I would say that is a solid B+ episode of Mad Men.
Dang it.
And a solid A+ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Emma Viglin, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
Thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Where can people find you?
The Majority Report, live at noon every weekday on YouTube, noon Eastern. We're a daily news political podcast. Check us out, folks.
It's a great show. I suggest everybody watch it. Emma, thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/broadcast. The $8 tier gets you a nickname from prep school. Vince, we have three of them this week. Are you excited?
Oh, so excited. I love to give nicknames.
I love when
makes
you
me
do
feel
it.
Alive.
I love to be alive. Vince, the first one is Stephanie Martin.
Oh, Stephanie Martin. More like Ricky Martin. We call this girl Menuda.
Oh, shit.
It's like
Menudo,
but for girls.
Yeah. If you're living La Vida Loca... then you should drink a coca. I'm sorry.
You got it. Yep, you did it.
Yeah, now I'm starting to do this again. So I don't know why. Okay, two more. They're all, hey, you know what, Vince? It's all women this week.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. Women. This one is for the ladies.
Ladies' night, and the kittens' the claws are out.
Yeah, and that pussy's tight. Okay. I'm sorry. Oh.
I guess I set you up for it.
Yeah, that's your fault. Okay. Next is Megan Lawson.
Lawson, we call her Judge Junior.
Oh, it's Judge Junior is really good. Mm. Don't piss on my leg and tell me I'm Megan. Okay, and finally, and finally,
people say that
they do. finally, last but not least, Marissa Ramos.
We call her Sushi because she is most raw.
You're going to have to explain
most
that.
Raw because, you know, sushi.
Oh, Ramos. Ramos.
Raw.
Most
raw.
Most raw.
Ramos.
Yeah.
You get it?
Yeah.
You get it? She's like a crudo or a tartar.
Okay. I like it. We're calling this lady Sushi because that fish Gotta swim. I don't know, man. We're calling Marissa Ramos chicken of the sea. All right, those are your prep school names. And you can get yourself one by going to patreon.com/frogcast and joining the $8 tier or more. You know, whatever you give, 8 or above, we'll give you a shout out. Patreon.com/frogcast, frogcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at
Passion Sunday. Wife in bed with me. Sunday morning, Sally pours her dad a Bloody Mary. Oh, Sunday morning, Catholic mass is boring. Peggy tries to leave, but Father Gill makes Peggy stay with her family. Now it's Palm Sunday. Dawn makes pancakes. It's Palm Sunday. The draper's son griddles his face. Oh, Sunday morning, Roger feeling horny, so he calls up Vicky. Dawn works on Sunday, cause Duck got a call from Shelkin Healy. Pitching to AA, pitching to AA, pitching ads to American Airlines, yeah. But whenever Friday comes, Chuck finds that Shell has been fired. Easter Sunday, the sister of Peggy. Easter morning, she tells the priest about her sister's baby. Oh, Sunday morning, she snitches and then says a Hail Mary. Then Easter Sunday, Father Gill is being judgy. Donnie fights Betty.
Donnie
fights Betty. Betty wants Donnie to beat their son. Yeah. Bobby goes and talks to Don. Bobby goes and talks to Don, and then we both start hugging and crying. Sunday, Sunday. Don't hit Bobby. Sunday, it's a Draper D story. Oh, Sunday, Sunday. Oh, that's what this episode is. Oh, three Sundays. It's a pretty good episode. Oh, Sunday, Sunday. Yo, what up, bitch? My name is Phillips. Flap, flap, flap. I think I did incest. That's the guy who... All right, fade out. Anyways, I think he did do incest. It's fucking crazy, dog. What is wrong with people? Good songwriter, though.